From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. Breakthrough is a word cancer researchers don't use lightly, but tonight it is exactly the word being used by the government about a new drug that has produced remarkable results against a form of cancer usually considered a death sentence, including for former President Jimmy Carter, who was treated for advanced melanoma with the drug and announced late last year he was cancer-free. It's part of a new class of drugs giving hope to not only advanced melanoma patients, but potentially those suffering other cancers as well. NBC's Ann Thompson has late details.
Joy and excitement and celebration.
Former President Jimmy Carter is living proof of the promise of targeted cancer therapies.
I want to be a person that loves other people.
Today, blockbuster news about Keytruda, the drug Carter took for advanced melanoma, changing the prognosis for this all-too-fatal disease. A new study says 40% of advanced melanoma patients were alive 3 years after taking Keytruda, a dramatic improvement. Just 5 years ago, the median survival rate was less than a year.
We've made a huge impact in this disease that had very little hope before.
Just look at Erin Youngerberg.
So how's your health? My health right now is pretty good.
So good, she bought a house. And this summer, we'll add Iceland to her list of exotic destinations. 2.5 years on Keytruda did what surgery and other drug therapies could not, stabilize her stage 4 melanoma.
You read the statistics and it says 50% chance of surviving a year. And I'm going on, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years almost since being diagnosed. So it's pretty amazing.
Keytruda works by activating the body's immune system to attack the cancer with minimal side effects. It is expensive, about $150,000 a year, but covered by insurance. While it is exciting progress, the study's author cautions Keytruda is not yet a cure.
I think we've made a big leap forward in that, but our first goal is to improve survival, quality of life, and to hopefully turn this into a chronic illness.
I think for me, the drug has given hope and let me get back to more of a normal life.
Potentially commuting a death sentence to a manageable disease. Ann Thompson, NBC News, Jersey City, New Jersey.
Now to another wild day in the race for president. In a campaign season where we saw one candidate who wasn't even his party's nominee name a vice presidential running mate, now comes an unprecedented move from another candidate, Donald Trump, naming his own slate of potential Supreme Court picks. It's just one of several moves Trump is making to try and win over skeptical conservatives. NBC's Katie Turr explains.
Tonight, another headline grabber from Donald Trump. Not yet the official nominee, but already unveiling his potential Supreme Court picks. A conservative dream team and a play to win over Trump skeptics, including Utah Judge Thomas Lee, brother of Utah Senator Mike Lee, who endorsed Ted Cruz. Texas Judge Don Willett, who repeatedly mocked Trump on Twitter, calling him Darth Trump. And federal judge Diane Sykes, ex-wife of conservative Never Trump radio host Charlie Sykes.
I don't believe anything he says, but she would certainly be an outstanding choice.
The brash outsider trying to convince Republican insiders he's serious. Today, meeting with GOP foreign policy icon Henry Kissinger. And despite trashing politicians who take campaign cash as corrupt.
Me? I'm different. I'm self-funding my campaign. I'm working for you.
He signed a joint fundraising agreement with the Republican Party. Now Trump is working on rehabbing his image, making peace with Megyn Kelly over the words used in his Twitter tirades.
Bimbo?
Well, that was a retweet, yeah. Did I say that?
Many times.
Ooh, okay. Excuse me.
And this morning, sending out one of his most effective surrogates, daughter Ivanka, to push back on accusations in a New York Times article.
He's not a groper. It's not who he is. And I've known my father, obviously, my whole life, and he has total respect for women.
The campaign doesn't call this changing. They don't like to use that word. Instead, they say Donald Trump is adapting to his new role as the leader of the Republican Party. But the question is, how much can he adapt before his supporters stop seeing him as an outsider? Lester.
All right, Katie, and as Trump makes moves to unite his party as the presumptive nominee, the Democratic Party is fraying at the seams. And a new national poll shows Trump leading Hillary Clinton by 3 points. Clinton will almost certainly be the nominee to face Trump, but Bernie Sanders keeps racking up wins and ratcheting up the rhetoric as he accuses the party of treating him unfairly. NBC's Andrea Mitchell on the Democrats' civil war.
In California, Bernie Sanders continuing his revolution against the Democratic Party and its leaders.
In state after state, the people have stood up and helped defeat the establishment.
This after Sanders' big win in Oregon and Hillary Clinton's apparent razor-thin victory in Kentucky. A split decision in Tuesday night's primaries. But it's the growing split among Democrats that's raising big questions about how they'll ever unite to defeat Donald Trump.
A word to the leadership of the Democratic Party. Open the doors, let the people in.
His followers don't look at Hillary Clinton as kind of brand B compared to their man. They look at Hillary Clinton as an establishment candidate. In many ways, a candidate they don't have any interest to vote for.
Clinton supporters want Sanders to ratchet down his rhetoric.
Bernie has to focus on the issues that matter and making sure that Donald Trump never sets foot in the Oval Office.
Hoping he'll fall in line once the primaries are over, as Clinton did in 2008. But tonight, Sanders' campaign manager telling Chuck Todd they're fighting all the way to Philadelphia.
The senator's been very clear that we're going to go through the process and that he's going to the convention.
But Vice President Biden tonight downplaying talk of strains in the parties.
I'm confident that Bernie will be supportive if Hillary wins, which the numbers indicate will happen. And so I'm not worried. There's no fundamental split or anything in the Democratic Party.
But Clinton revealed last night that only weeks before she announced she was running last year, she was still making speeches for hundreds of thousands of dollars, a total of almost $1.5 million in just 3 months. One reason she's having trouble winning over Sanders supporters. Lester?
Andrea Mitchell tonight. Thank you, Andrea. New troubling predictions tonight for this summer's air travel season. The airline industry now predicting a record 231 million people will fly between June and August, just as the TSA struggles to staff up in time to meet the demand. And now the head of Homeland Security is trying to pressure the airlines into letting passengers check their bags for free to speed things up on the security line. NBC's Tom Costello has the latest.
On the ground at the world's fourth busiest airport, federal security directors from other airports and regions now trying to fix O'Hare's TSA problems. Today, Mary Woland wasn't taking any chances, getting here 4 hours before her trip to San Francisco.
I have a whole bag of tricks here. I've got sewing, I've got my books, I've got lunch and dinner just in case.
Two meals.
I've been watching the news.
At times, today at O'Hare, somewhat shorter lines thanks to a lighter travel Wednesday, more TSA officers and dog teams. If the dogs or officers don't detect explosives, more passengers can move through expedited screening lanes. And airline staffers are now helping with TSA traffic flow.
If we can have employees do that, then hopefully that will free up some screeners to maybe open an additional lane and get the lines moving faster.
Meanwhile, the Homeland Security Secretary is now joining members of Congress in pressuring the airlines to do more.
We've asked the airlines to consider possibly eliminating the checked baggage fee to encourage people to check their luggage rather than put it in the carry-on.
But the airline industry says no to cutting bag fees, insisting the TSA needs to staff up and fast.
The airlines are not about to change their fees just even for a short period of time because it's millions of dollars in revenue and billions of dollars a year.
And the airlines today predicted even more profits over the summer with a record 2.5 million passengers each day, 100,000 more than last year.
Live now at O'Hare Airport here in Chicago. You know, Lester, there's been a lot of talk about these baggage fees. Last year, they totaled about $4 billion for the airlines. But airline analysts say, listen, that's just a drop in the bucket for most airlines on the bottom line. Back to you.
Quite a line behind you there, Tom. Thank you. Millions of Americans are now in for a pay raise after President Obama announced a sweeping change to the country's overtime rules. It means bigger paydays for mostly white-collar workers who put in more than 40 hours a week. But it's also sparking new fears among some employers. NBC's Ron Mott has the details.
For many salary professionals, extra hours in the office don't always translate to extra dollars in their paychecks. But starting December 1st, a new federal labor rule is expected to increase the number of Americans eligible for overtime pay.
You're deprived your dignity, in my view, when you know you're working much, much harder and much, much longer than you're getting compensated for.
Here's what the new rule means. Salaried white-collared employees who make less than $47,476 will now be guaranteed overtime when they work more than 40 hours, up from the current threshold of $23,660, a change that's expected to affect 4.2 million people. This is welcome news for Melissa Agnello, a microbiologist at UCLA earning about $42,000 a year and expects another $5,000 in OT.
It means the difference between me worrying at the end of each month to now being able to relax and actually do my work and do my research.
But it's not welcome news for everyone.
Employers start making trade-offs. Who are they going to now work less, and who are they going to work more?
Experts say employers worried about their bottom lines could raise some salaries to avoid paying overtime, convert others to hourly and limit their hours, or even hire part-time staff.
And what about delivery?
Jeremy Marin owns a chain of four restaurants in New York City and New Jersey. He's already feeling squeezed by recent changes to the minimum wage and health care.
We hope not to fire anybody. What it might end up being is cutting down the hours and probably not hiring as many new people. That's significant.
Ron Mott, NBC News, Chicago.
Thousands of commuters were stranded when a massive fire erupted beneath the tracks of one of the busiest rail lines in the nation. It caused complete chaos, paralyzing much of New York's Metro North suburban rail line. And NBC's Joe Fryer has late details on what caused it all.
The fireball ignited beneath a well-traveled New York rail line, spitting flames for 2 hours at the tracks above.
I would say the fire was five or six stories high. It was enormous, absolutely enormous.
The fire started last night in a garden center, and witnesses could hear explosions caused by nearby propane tanks.
It was blowing up, boom, the fire was getting bigger.
Well, a train was seen zooming right by the flames. No one was seriously hurt. It took more than 150 firefighters to douse the inferno, bringing the evening rush hour to a screeching halt. Today, with two tracks out of commission, the commute is crawling along.
Oh, it's a major inconvenience.
When stuff like this happens, you just wait. That's the only thing you can do.
Today, fire marshals are saying the flames were sparked by fuel that was accidentally spilled on a hot generator. For officials, the propane tanks are also concerning.
This is going to raise questions about what's going on underneath these sites. Do they know what's there, and are they thinking about the potential for this kind of tragedy?
For now, until all the tracks are back in service, more than 100,000 passengers should brace for a slow go following an intense fire. Joe Fryer, NBC News, New York.
It has been more than 2 years since more than 200 schoolgirls were kidnapped in Nigeria by the terror group Boko Haram, sparking the worldwide Bring Back Our Girls campaign on social media. Now, for the first time, it is believed that one of those victims has escaped to freedom. NBC's Bill Neely has her story.
Tears after news that a kidnapped girl is free. A breakthrough, say activists, after 2 years of desperate searching. Nigeria's army released this photo of a 19-year-old with a baby who says she fled her captors yesterday. Her parents then identifying her as one of the more than 200 girls taken from Chibok School by Islamists from one of the world's deadliest terror groups, Boko Haram.
She actually escaped without any iota of doubt. She is one of the Chibok girls.
During that mass kidnapping of children, just a few got away. Since then, no one made it out, in spite of huge searches and a global hashtag campaign, Bring Back Our Girls. Michelle Obama joining celebrities in worldwide outrage. The escaped girl told rescuers six of the girls are now dead, the others being held in a forest. But human rights groups say many others were forced to become suicide bombers. And over 2,000 more have been abducted by Boko Haram. Few have ever been found. Bill Neely, NBC News, London.
Still ahead here tonight, O.J. Simpson attorney Robert Shapiro breaks his silence about the trial of the century, why he believes there was more than one killer. Also caught on camera, a race against time to rescue a man trapped under a burning SUV. We're back now with those new revelations from the O.J. Simpson trial, still captivating the country all these years later. In a candid new interview, Robert Shapiro, part of Simpson's legal dream team, discussed one of the most famous moments in the trial that may have swayed the jury, and his theory that it could have been more than one killer. NBC's Miguel Almaguer has details.
It may have been the defining moment of the O.J. Simpson murder trial.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Simpson appearing to struggle to put on the glove found at the scene of the double murder. The dramatic move suggested by attorney Robert Shapiro, now breaking his silence, offering insight into that calculated gamble.
I tried the glove on. It was a little bit wide in my palm and a little bit long in my fingers. O.J. Simpson has enormous hands, and I knew that that glove would not fit him.
That moment, played out by actor John Travolta, was depicted in the FX series The People vs. O.J. Simpson.
I tried the glove on in there myself. It didn't fit. It will never fit him.
Sitting down with Megyn Kelly, Shapiro says the prosecution may have relied too heavily on what he calls the one killer theory.
It was within reasonable medical probability that more than one knife was used. There's a strong possibility that more than one person was involved.
The veteran attorney dropped another bombshell. 20 years after the verdict, he still has thoughts he's keeping to himself.
I felt legal justice was done. As far as moral justice, I haven't discussed it with anyone, including my wife.
New insight into an old case that continues to captivate the nation. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
We're back in a moment with the world's most expensive diamond and how much it just sold for. The gun purportedly used to kill Trayvon Martin has apparently been sold for nearly $140,000. George Zimmerman, who was acquitted for Martin's death in 2013, put the gun up for auction online. The high bidder used the handle John Smith, and the website says Zimmerman is still verifying payment after fake bidders interfered with the auction. A dramatic rescue caught on camera in Alaska. Dash cam footage of several people, including a police officer, coming to the aid of a man pinned beneath a burning SUV after a crash. Smoke pouring out. Using all their might together, they were able to tip the vehicle just enough for the man to escape right before the entire SUV burst into flames. How would you like to have nearly $60 million wrapped around your finger? The Oppenheimer Blue is now the most expensive diamond in the world, selling at auction today for over $58 million. It's a 14.6-carat blue diamond named after the late chairman of the De Beers Empire, who gave it to his wife as a gift. That's going to do it for us on a Wednesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.